Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam. Dear listeners, Radio Sai continues its weekly presentation of the talking book version of Mr. Howard Moffat's highly acclaimed book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. The author was among the very early Westerners who came to Satya Sai Baba as a skeptic in 1964, and drawn by his enigma, he stayed for considerable periods of time near him in the next 6 years. During this period, he conducted extensive research and probing investigations into the Sai phenomena. He published his findings as the book that has become a classic of Sai literature, often considered the primer which introduced Sri Satya Sai Baba to millions round the world. This book was first published in 1971. Since then, it has been instrumental in drawing millions of seekers to the loving path of Satya Sai. These readings, dear listeners, are being aired every week, and if you wish to revisit a chapter at any time, you can do so at our website radiosai.org. So dear listeners, welcome now to Sai Baba, Man of Miracles by Howard Moffat.
Sai Ram, and welcome to this talking book session of excerpts from Mr. Howard Moffat's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. We have now come to chapter 16, which bears the title, A Word from the West. It starts off with a quote from Iraqi, a Persian mystic poet, which says, quote, "When at thy love a lamp we light, our barn of being is ablaze. And of that inward glow so bright, a wisp of smoke to heaven we raise." Unquote. Have you ever wondered what brings so many Westerners to Puttaparthi? Here are select passages from this chapter.
Pilgrims of the spiritual search from all parts of the globe have found their way to the abode of great peace, hidden in the wild hills. Some have just managed to pay a flying visit. Baba has filled them with wonder and joy, and almost always found the way into the deep recesses of their hearts. Others have been able to remain months with the man of power and love, and so have gone through a deep sea change. Their lives are never quite the same again. As the years pass, what was at first a trickle from the far-off places is increasing to a steady stream. That stream is being fed from America, with emphasis on California, Australia, Europe, Africa, the Far East, and Southeast Asia. People, as a rule, do not come so far merely out of idle curiosity. They come with big personal problems or seeking the path to enlightenment. They come with hope and at least a little faith, or they would not be there at all. Among the non-Indian followers of Sai Baba, one of the best-known names is Madam Indira Devi, the internationally famous yoga teacher and authoress of several books on yoga. Once, when she was on a visit to the Theosophical Society headquarters at Adyar, my wife and I told her some of our experiences with Baba. This was apparently the first time she had heard his name, but she at once sensed intuitively his great importance. Immediately, she seemed to have no doubt whatever that this was one man in India she must see, no matter what cost in time and trouble. She was scheduled to fly to Saigon for a lecture engagement and had originally intended returning to her yoga foundation in Southern California directly from Vietnam. But now she changed her mind and came back to India in order to meet Sai Baba. After a mountain of difficulties, because Baba was touring and his movements were uncertain, she finally made the contact at Prashanthi Nilayam, reaching there in the hammering heat of an Indian summer. She seems to have recognized his great spiritual stature from that first meeting, and straightaway became a fervent and very active devotee. At that time, she was just starting on her mission to teach and encourage meditation throughout the world. Baba gave his blessings to this work, her mission of light in darkness. Since then, Indira Devi has made the long journey from California to India several times a year to spend a period with Baba at Prashanthi Nilayam and other places. I will leave her, as a writer herself, to tell whatever she wishes of her own spiritual and miraculous experiences. But of the various materializations Baba has performed for her and which she has described to me, there are two I would like to record here, for their interest as well as evidential value coming from a witness of world renown. One is this. In front of Indira Devi and a party of American visitors, Baba took from her, from his land of nowhere, a long, bulky Japamala, a string of 108 large pearls. She was wearing it when a little later I saw her at Adyar in company with one of the Americans who had witnessed its production. A good many people have seen Baba change one object to another or one substance to another openly, without shield or covering before their gaze. I myself saw this, for instance, when at Horsley Hills he turned a piece of hard rock into sugar candy. The second incident, in connection with Indira Devi's experience, concerns a dramatic example of this type of transmutation through sankalpa or divine will. It also involves some mind reading. One day, Baba materialized for her an ornate ring set with a large spray of colorful stones. Indira Devi told me that she has no liking for jewelry, particularly the striking decorative type worn so well by dark-skinned Indian women. She herself is a Russian-born American citizen whose name Indira Devi derives from an association with India earlier in her life. She has a very pale skin. Anyway, she was not happy about the ring. It was a gift from Baba and she felt she should wear it for that reason. But it did not suit her and she did not like it. The dilemma worried her a great deal for a day and night, she said. Then she found herself invited to another group interview, and wearing Baba's disturbing gift on her finger, she waited with several other people for his arrival. Soon after he entered the room, he asked her to hand him the ring, making a remark from which she was sure he was fully aware of her dilemma. Then, holding the ring between his thumb and forefinger with the display of stones uppermost and in full view, he blew several times on the stones as if blowing out a match. Suddenly, as all watched, the spray of brightly colored stones merged into a single sparkling diamond. Baba handed the ring with its solitaire diamond back to her. It was now something which she could wear happily and constantly.
Here is a story in condensed form of how one man of the Western world came to Sai Baba and of how it affected his life.
Mr. Alf Tideman Johansson of Oslo, Norway, arrived in India with nothing but the proverbial typewriter and his own ability, grit, energy and ambition to make a fortune. Within 12 years, that is, by 1962, he had built up one of the largest ship agency companies in India, handling more ships each year than any other individual company. His was India's pioneer company in grain discharging. It handled more than half of the grain ships, bringing enormous quantities of food to India to avoid large-scale starvation there. His big success did not pass unnoticed. Into certain minds entered jealousy, envy, and schemes for getting control of his business. Certain key men on his executive staff were soon misusing their powers to divert the company's assets into their own pockets. When I found out that malpractices were taking place, Alf Tideman told me, I knew that I would have to face a furious battle with a ruthless enemy. As soon as I took steps to seal the leakages, the executives concerned terminated their services and started a competing company. Their aim was to take away all my business. As part of their scheme, his enemies sent anonymous letters to Income Tax, Reserve Bank, and Customs authorities indicating that the Tideman Company was abusing the laws and regulations of the country. Apparently, it is customary for such authorities to take action on anonymous letters. They soon discovered who the senders were, and then months of investigations followed, during which Alf had to provide documents covering all the past years to prove that the allegations against him were false. Naturally, his business clients were disturbed at the sudden exodus of his key staff and the rumors that were floating around. To add fuel to the fire, his scheming enemies sent letters to all his clients informing them that his company was in trouble with the government. All this put tremendous restrictions on his business operations, and things looked very bleak indeed. Nevertheless, because of his past integrity, Alf's clients did not immediately desert him, and the new competing company established by his defecting executives was not doing well. So then, they made their next move, a move that is apparently not uncommon in the concrete jungles of modern India. They engaged a black magician to work against him. Alf said, "I could handle the other assaults," but was not prepared for this attack from occult black science. Nor did I, at the time, have the slightest idea that such methods were being used. Even if I had known, I would have laughed at it as pure superstition. But Alf's lawyer in Bombay, who was working on the company's problems, soon caught a whiff of the black magic. He had known similar cases before. Being a good friend, and knowing Tideman's innocence and integrity, the lawyer took him along to a Parsi priest who lived in an old temple in Bombay. The priest, who was clairvoyant and had other powers, confirmed that strong forces were being used against Alf Tideman. The latter kept in regular touch with the old Parsi priest, and he says, "By many strange methods, he began piloting me and my business through the troubled waters stirred up by the black magician." The magician himself now came out of hiding. Discovering that counter forces were being played successfully against him, he decided to strike directly and boldly. He turned up at Alf's office and, by various methods well known to students of sorcery, tried to gain dominion over his intended victim. But Tideman had been warned of this possibility by the Parsi priest and immediately suspected the evil-eyed old Indian who, by clever ruses, had gained admittance to his private office. Alf managed to avoid the initial traps and then maneuvered the sorcerer into his car, planning to take him along to the old Parsi priest. On the way, perhaps recognizing Tideman's strength and also his liberality, he decided to change masters. He admitted involuntarily that he had been employed by Alf's enemies to destroy him, his family and company. "But he had changed his mind," the magician said, "and would work for Tideman if the latter paid him reasonably well. He would see to it that all Alf's enemies were completely annihilated." "Black magicians are very powerful," he announced, and added menacingly, "they can even kill a child in its mother's womb." Alf had just received that very morning a cable from Norway informing him that his wife had lost her child in its 7th month. This must be more than a coincidence, he thought. At the temple, the Parsi priest immediately recognized the sorcerer for what he was and chased him away, threatening to report him to the police. He warned Alf to have nothing whatever to do with this man of unclean powers. Soon after that, Alf Tideman was taken by a business friend, his taxation expert, to Shirdi. There he had the feeling that God had opened a door to let me feel his greatness for a blessed moment, during which the great weight fell from my shoulders and my troubles evaporated. He learned that the old Parsi priest who was helping him was a devotee of Shirdi Sai Baba, and he began to understand that it was really the Sai power that was guiding him through the reefs and shoals of strange, difficult waters. Soon the black magician gave up the unequal struggle. The government authorities decided that the accusations were false and baseless, and all the intrigues of Alf's underhand enemies fell to the ground. The difficulties that had threatened to destroy him were completely overcome, and the troubled year came to an end. Early in 1963, the Tideman Company was getting back on its feet and beginning to prosper again. Though the struggle had taken a toll of Alf's strength, it had also shown him a light. This light and a power that brought peace and refreshment to his mind and spirit were at the village of Shirdi, over which the spirit of old Sai Baba seemed to brood. It was only a few hours' car journey from Bombay, and Alf paid regular visits there during the next 3 years. On February 26, 1966, he was at Shirdi with the friend who first took him there and the Parsi priest, whom he now addressed as Father. In front of the temple, a short man in a blue shirt walked up to Alf and asked, "Have you ever met Sri Sathya Sai Baba?" Alf replied that he had not, and the man went on, "You must see him. He is coming to Bombay on the 14th of March. If there is any god on this earth, he is God." Then he gave vibhuti from a silver container to each of the party, and to Alf he gave a small locket with a picture of Sathya Sai in a blue shirt. "Don't forget to see him in Bombay on 14th of next month," he repeated and went away. Later, as they were about to leave Shirdi, they again saw the man by the side of the road. He greeted them and repeated again the advice to Alf that he should see Sathya Sai on March 14th. The Norwegian was at this period in the middle of another deep problem. Because of his wife's bad health, she could not live in India and really needed him with her and the children in Norway. He felt that he must somehow sell his business and return there. But how could he find a good buyer? He had built the business on his own personal integrity and efficiency. He knew that it depended very much on the goodwill felt towards him personally in the shipping world. Potential buyers would think that with Tidemand himself gone, the business might not be worth much. He had faced many mountainous obstacles in his life, and this was one of the biggest. He had learned that the Sai power was very great. If in fact Sathya Sai was a reincarnation of Shirdi Sai, and was a divine avatar, as people said, he could solve this or any other problem. Alf decided that he must have an interview with this man if he should come to Bombay as predicted by the character in the blue shirt. But deciding such a thing and achieving it are two different things. Most people have to work hard and overcome obstacles to reach Sai Baba. Some have to go through the labors of Hercules. Alf was one of these. Certainly, Sathya Sai was in Bombay by March 14th, just as Blue Shirt had foretold. Day after day, for many hours, the Norwegian sat cross-legged in broiling sun with the big crowds outside the place where Baba was staying. First the Gwalior Palace, and then the house of Mr. Sawant, the food minister of the Maharashtra government. Or he sat with even bigger crowds in the stadium listening to Baba lecture in Telugu, with a translation into Hindi by Dr. B. Ramakrishna Rao. Alf understood neither of these languages. During this time, he saw the little figure of Sathya, with his shining robe and black dome of hair, walking among the people signing photos, blessing objects presented for his touch, producing vibhuti here and there. The big blonde Norwegian was favored with a nod, a friendly smile, a greeting now and again, but there were no signs of the longed-for interview. Being one of the very few Europeans in the crowds, Alf was becoming well-known among the Sai following. He was invited to homes of devotees and heard wonderful stories about Baba's love, grace, and miraculous powers. This was all very inspiring, but it did not solve his problem. After 4 days of trying and getting nowhere, he almost decided to give up. It was then that a strange man with a curved nose and black beard said to him, "Would you like to meet Sai Baba?" The stranger said that he could arrange an appointment, and Alf decided to take a sporting chance with him. There was still much to go through. Under the direction of this bearded stranger, Alf had to buy grass for a cow, give something to beggars, visit a temple and touch the floor with his forehead before an image there, buy garlands of flowers and kankans of mogra flowers. Perhaps all this ritual helped, or maybe the stranger knew the right people near to Baba. Anyway, on the morning of March 18th, Alf went for his first appointment. Stepping out of the car in front of Mr. Sawant's house, he took off his shoes and with a garland of kankans in his hand, began to climb the steps. Suddenly he looked up and there stood Baba as if waiting for him. "I'm so happy to see you," Baba said with simple friendliness. Usually Swami will not let people place garlands on him. He merely places it aside. But now, before the ministers and VIPs who had gathered in the entrance, he permitted the tall Norwegian to garland him. "Please come up," he said, patting Alf on the back. The latter soon found himself on the first floor of the huge house occupied by the food minister. There, sitting on the carpet with about 20 people, he heard Swami give a discourse, again in Telugu with Hindi translation. But every now and then, during his talk, Baba paused to perform a materialization miracle. In one pause, he materialized Vibhuti, in another, a small locket with a picture of Shirdi Baba. These were for Alf, who writes that they were taken right out of the air in front of the ministers, who all considered this to be a normal procedure for him. Then the master went on teaching mainly in parables, which were later translated into English for tied men. Then came another pause in which he autographed a photo for one of the women and materialized for her a locket of Vishnu. Then he got up and put a Vibhuti mark on everyone's forehead. During the talk, he had been playing with Alf's kankans. Now he gave the big Norwegian another friendly pat and a few encouraging words before leaving the room. Although Alf had at last gained regular access to the house where Swami was staying, the long-awaited private interview and the solution to his big problem still seemed difficult to obtain. But other things happened. Urged on by the man with the curved nose, who also seemed to Alf to have a precognitive nose for Baba's movements, he even had the temerity to invite the great master to his top-floor apartment. The latter graciously accepted and came with a small group of close devotees on March 24th, 10 long days after Alf had first sighted him at the Gwalior Palace. Elaborate arrangements had been made under the direction and supervision of that curved precognitive nose. These included lavish floral decorations, a children's band, a young woman, she was supposed to be and probably was a virgin, to blow a conch shell and wash Baba's feet on his arrival. She blew the shell successfully, but Swami would not permit the feet washing ritual. He was more interested in some sick people who had been brought than the display and splendor of decorations. But he listened to the children's music with pleasure and took Vibhuti for each and a 9-stone ring for the leader out of the fresh sea breeze stirring the flowers in the roof garden. Most important of all, he invited Alf to come to him for a private interview on the following morning. During this hard-earned climactic interview, Alf Tideman discovered, as many have done before and since, that Sai Baba already knew his problems and his past. "I have been thinking about selling my business," Alf said. "I have been thinking about the same thing," Swami answered. Then the Norwegian began to explain the difficulties. "Do not worry," Swami told him. "I will help you find a reliable buyer and obtain a good price." He went on to say that it was now right for Alf to get away from life in the Bombay business circles with all it entailed and settle down in Norway with his family. In this way, his wife's health would improve. Perhaps to infuse more confidence and dispel any doubts in the mind of the worried shipping man, Baba said, "Do you remember the black magician? I helped you then." In his notes on this interview, the turning point of his life, Alf writes, "He gave me convincing evidence of his divine powers, and I was made to understand the purpose of my life. I knew that all the prayers I had made to God during my lifetime and all the help I had got as a result of those prayers were known to Baba. I knew too that though there had been many obstacles in the final stage of reaching him, many tests to my faith and courage, he had really called me to him through strange and miraculous ways. The man in the blue shirt at Shirdi, for instance, who was he? I had found on inquiry that none of Sai Baba's closest devotees, not even Mr. N. Kasturi, knew that Baba would be coming to Bombay on March 14th. Swami seemed to know too that I had long been searching for a living spiritual teacher, and at this first interview he said, 'You need not look for a guru anymore, From now on, I will guide you. At the end, Baba materialized for me a locket with his picture, some sweets to eat, and some vibhuti. The next day, the manager of the Bombay branch of one of the largest companies in India phoned me to say he had heard I might be interested to sell my company. He would like to talk to me about it. During the negotiations that followed, I was in regular touch with Swami, seeing him often. And in my early morning meditations, which Swami had told me to observe with regularity, I received amazing inspiration for solving the complex problems in connection with the proposed selling contract, for which there was no sample precedent of any kind available. After some months of difficult negotiations, helped by the ever-present guiding hand of Baba, a very favorable contract materialized for the sale of my shipping agency business in India. Alf Tideman returned to his wife and family in Oslo. His early dream had come true. He had made his fortune, but something much more important had happened to him in India. He had found his Sadguru, his spiritual guide and mentor, who brought meaning to the chaos and emptiness of life lived only at the material level.
Certainly, Swami's grace is beyond boundaries, color, culture, faith, nationality, and even religion. How else can we explain the flow of such selfless love from our dear Lord? We leave you with these experiences in today's session. More when we meet the next time. Till then, all the best and Jai Sai Ram. You have been listening to a presentation of excerpts from Mr. Howard Murfitt's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. This book has been published in 1971 by Frederick Miller Limited in London.